I remember when I was a Talmud here in the yeshiva, Rav Aaron Kahn Shlita, who is one of the outstanding Rosh Yeshiva of our yeshiva, who you guys unfortunately don't get much exposure to because he's pretty much retired from the yeshiva. He has a lot going on in the shul in Brooklyn. If you recall, last year, the guys that were in the shul last year, we went to visit him. We went to when we went to Rabbi Reisman, we went to Rav Kahn also. So Rav Kahn was on a mission when I was in the yeshiva to inform us about the Gedolei Torah that had walked through the halls of our yeshiva, that we should understand the history of the yeshiva, to just appreciate what it meant that Rav Shimon Shkup gave shir in this yeshiva, what it meant that Rav Meshe Soloveitchik, we had never heard of the Meitzer to Ilui before Rav Kahn told us all about the Meitzer to Ilui, who I believe is buried in Queens. You can go as Rav Meshe Soloveitchik. So that was one of his projects that he was that he was very adamant about, and it was fantastic. It was like such a nice way to gain a certain sense of pride in like the history of the yeshiva and what the yeshiva represents. But I remember one particular time he was talking about Rav Gorelick, Zichrono Livracha. Rav Schachter also has great stories about Rav Gorelick. Rav Kahn was trying to give us a sense of Rav Gorelick's personality. So he said that one day he was learning in the Beis Medrash, and Rav Gorelick Zatzal just like stormed into the Beis Medrash, like on fire. And he said, Rav Kahn said, he grabbed me by the lapels, which meant Rav Kahn was already wearing a frock. And he said, he grabbed me by the lapels, and he said, "I've got it! I've got it!" And Rav Kahn said, "What, Rebbe? You know, put my feet down back on the ground, please. What have you got? What have you figured out?" And Rav Gorelick said, "The reason that fish are not subject to Ayin Hara, the reason that Dugim don't have Ayin Hara, it's because of refraction." He said, if you look at a fish in water, where you see the fish isn't really there, because the way the water bends the rays of light, the fish is actually just a little bit over. So when you're looking at the fish, you're not really looking where the fish is. So the fish is not subject to Ayin Hara. I got it. That's why fish are not subject to Ayin Hara. So and I do feel after that story that I understand Rabbi Gorelick a little bit more, but I don't feel that I understand why fish are not subject to Ayin Hara so much more. The pashtus is, fish are not subject to Ayin Hara because of their association with Yosef HaTzadik. It's Yosef HaTzadik's children who are blessed with V'yidgu L'rov Bekerev Ha'aretz, that they should be like Dagim. And Yosef, more than any of the other Shvatim, is not vulnerable to Ayin Hara. The Gemara Brachos and Daf Chav tells us that Amaluhu Anami Zara di Yosef Kaasina Tilo Shotabe Einabisha, that I come from the Zara di Yosef, and anyone from Zara di Yosef is not susceptible. Tayin Hara, Dixiv Ben Paras Yosef, Ben Paras Ali Ayin, Vamra Biavo, Altakre Ali Ayin Elo Ole Ayin, that someone who's beyond the impact of any Ayin Hara is not going to impact me. Rabbi Yochanan said, therefore he had nothing to worry about because he's a descendant of Yosef. So the question is though, so why? What is it about Yosef that gives Yosef a tzaddik a protective shield from Ayin Hara? And on a different note, when Yosef is called to interpret Paro's dream, hearing of Yosef's great skill in this area, so Paro speaks very nicely to Yosef because he's calling in, as far as he knows, as far as he can tell, the world's expert at dream interpreting. And you know, he's had a frustrating process with a bunch of clowns who were not able to interpret his dream properly. So finally he has someone who has a proven track record standing in front of him, so Paro speaks nicely to him. Vayomer Paro el Yosef, Chalom chalamti ufoseh reino so, v'ani shemati alech lemar, tishma chalom leftaroso, that I heard that you know how to interpret dreams. And notice the expression, Vayomer Paro. Vayomer is a soft expression. It's understood by Chazal always as a lashon raka. And then, after Yosef responds with his humility, that's not me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he's the one that, and then all of a sudden, Vayidaber Paro el Yosef, Vacholomin en yomer al svasayor. All of a sudden switches from Vayomer to Vayidaber. Vayidaber is a Lashon Kasha. And so it sounds like the entire tone that Paro used changed. Why? Just because Yosef was humble? Just because Yosef said, it's not me, it's the Ribono Shel Olam? So the Mitziv notes this this change in Paro's tone, and he has a mahalich to it. But these are the questions to think about. Number one, why is it that Yosef is not subject to Ayin Hara? And second, what is it about Vayomer Vayidaber, that Paro switches from Vayomer to Vayidaber? So Rabbi Emanuel Bernstein offers an insight into Yosef's personality that might help us understand all of this, and it will help us understand the special protection Yosef has from the Ayin Hara, and also how the conversation with Paro went. Yosef was the kind of person, suggests Rabbi Bernstein, and he has evidence for this, who was less concerned than most about what people thought about him. Meaning, there's always, every person within their personality has some balance between wanting to do what's right and wanting to do what's popular. Some people have an unhealthy balance, and they're only interested in what's popular and what's going to be accepted, and therefore are willing to sacrifice entirely what's right. Other people try to figure out some sort of reasonable balance, and some people are just, a little more extreme on one side or the other. So Yosef was a kind of person whose concern, whose primary concern was what is right, and was very, very minimally concerned, if at all, by what people thought of it. He wasn't so influenced about how his behaviors were going to be perceived, as long as he knew that what he was doing was proper. In the words of Akavya ben Mahalalel in the Mishnah in Maseches Idyos, in the fifth paragraph of Idyos, when he was asked to change his halachic positions in favor of a more popular position, and he was told, and if you do that, we'll make you the Av Beis Din, we'll give you the world, you just can't. Rav Shachter told us he once had this offer, someone told him that we'll give you this position, whatever it was, in some very popular shul in Flatbush, but you got to change from the Sechashmas to Nusach Sfar, and you got to stop with the Zionism stuff. So he said, no, thank you. Right? So the way Akavya ben Mahalal said was, Mutav Lili Kari Shote, Kol Yamai V'lo Liasu Sha'achas Roshul V'nei HaMakom. You want to call me a Shote my whole life, that's fine with me, as long as HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows that I'm always doing what's right. So that was like the motto of Yosef's life. That Yosef lived his life, Yosef HaTzadik lived his life with, I'm going to do what's right, and if other people don't like it, that's up to them. And what's the evidence for this? So first of all, when he has dreams that he believes to be prophetic visions and are important for the future development of the Am Hashem, he doesn't consider how sharing those dreams would play with his brother, how that would play out in terms of his brother's reaction. It's normally unbecoming of a tzaddik, and Yosef is definitely a tzaddik, it's right there in his name, Yosef HaTzaddik. It would be unbecoming of a tzaddik to tell others that they're going to one day bow to him. But if it was a nevuah, and it was meant to be shared, so it was a nevuah that had to be shared. Exactly how it's said and how it's going to be perceived, that's their problem. I have a message that I'm supposed to deliver. Second of all, Potiphar's wife tries to seduce him. She's the lady of the house. She has a lot of great authority over him. She can make him or break him. And he knew what was right. So Hashem is going to take care of the consequences. And therefore, he runs away and he disappoints her and he upsets her and he ends up in jail because of it. But at least he did what was right. When interpreting the dreams of the Sar Mashkim and Sar Ofim, so think about it. He had these two dejected roommates, and they're feeling down on themselves, and they tell him these dreams. So it's an easy opportunity to lift people's spirits, and just tell them nice things. But he didn't. He told them the truth, right? So he told for one of them it was better than for the other. But it wasn't about what's nice. It's about what's true. And in the case of the Sar Ofim, the truth really, really hurt. And but that's what he did. Because that was Yosef. So that brings us to this week's parasha. Paro is the most powerful man in the world, and Paro gives him a chance. And that conversation is going to determine whether Yosef lives or dies. So the first rule of that conversation should have been, don't say anything to upset him. Just be very agreeable. And yet, the first thing Paro says to him, Yosef says, well, actually, that's not correct. He's the guy that's correcting the Balkore on that that first conversation with Paro. No, sir, I don't interpret dreams. God does everything. Maybe his Kiruv speech could have waited a little bit, get to know Paro a little bit before you start being Makariv him to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, but that's Yosef. He's straightforward, he's honest, nothing is smoothed over. Paro, as expected, didn't like it. So his tone changed to Vayedaber. And that might explain why Yosef is not subject to Ayin Hara. The very notion of Ayin Hara is that a person is affected by those around him. That's what Ayin Hara means. That the way people look at you with jealousy or with animosity or whatever, somehow that impacts you. Yosef's whole life was, he behaved in a way where he was not impacted by the behavior of other people, by what other people said about him, by what other people, it just didn't bother him. And it stands to reason that the way others look at him are therefore not going to impact him in the way that it would a normal person. It's not going to impact his well-being in the way that that it would a normal person. You know, so the Bali Musar point out that a person has to work on himself to be more independent-minded. You know, I think Chav Salvavus writes that a person has to be tried to work on himself, where when someone praises you, that you don't believe it. That you don't always, you don't, and when someone criticizes you, you also don't believe it necessarily. And you always have to be open to see if there's truth in it, but don't let it crush you when someone criticizes you, and don't let it go to your head when someone praises you. Assess whether it's true or not, and figure out your own cheshbon ha-nefesh based on using as a data point the feedback that you're getting, but it shouldn't absolutely. I was just talking to a Talmud last night. A lot of Talmidim were, Baruch Hashem, being Malamei Torah Le'amo Yisrael, that are teaching in various schools. And, you know, when you're a first-year Rebbe or a second-year Rebbe, and maybe beyond that also, there are struggles. There are days where you come home and you're like, I should have been a plumber or a computer programmer or anything else but this. You know, I should have been anything but what I'm doing, right? And it's an avoda to not let a bad day make you feel that everything's a waste, that everything is that, meaning because a kid was mean to you that day, you know, like, okay, sometimes kids are mean, you know, and they're not going to, you know, behave properly, and they're going through their own stuff. But that's the way a person has to try to, as best as he can, not to be as impacted as we often are. You know, a couple of years ago, around Parshas Miketz, there were two patiras of great rabbanim who were great leaders in the American Jewish community around the same time. It was 3 years ago, Rabbi Fabian Schoenfeld, Zichrono Livracha, and Rabbi Gedalia Dov Schwartz, Zichrono Livracha. I think they both died the same week. And this was like a particular midah that made them into great leaders that they were. Rabbi Schoenfeld, I spoke to at the time to my Talmud, Rabbi Richard Schindelheim from Cleveland, originally from Long Beach, but he lives in Cleveland now. And he was a grandson of Rabbi Schoenfeld. So he told me that Rabbi Schoenfeld gave the invocation at the 1984 Republican National Convention. I mean, he was a very politically connected rabbi. And he had a connection with President Reagan, who was the most popular president of my lifetime. President Reagan won the vote in 1984, but like, I remember watching it on TV, and my parents were like, this can't be real. It's like 98% of the country voted for him. It was like, that's an exaggeration, but not much of an exaggeration. It's like, he was a very, very popular president. And the president wanted to speak at the Young Israel of Kew Gardens Hills, where Rabbi Schoenfeld was the rabbi. And the shul was very honored to have such an opportunity. And the campaign explained that they're going to come on Friday night. They need to set up cameras in the back of the shul. And Rabbi Schoenfeld said, I'm sorry, you can't do that. And he turned down the request. No thought of like coming up with a heter. Nachum are doing the malacha. It's for their own purposes. They're not doing it for you. There's a sense of Ava. It's the president of the United States. Nothing. No, we don't do that. There's not going to be cameras in my shul. It happens to be that was the... So President Reagan ended up speaking in North Woodmere. North Woodmere had a conservative shul. Rabbi Friedman was the rabbi of the conservative shul, who was also close with very politically connected. Rabbi Friedman is the ambassador's father. Right? Ambassador Friedman, his father was a great conservative rabbi. What I mean by a great conservative rabbi, first of all, is a very big shul, but he did whatever he could to convince the parents to send the kids to yeshiva. There are a bunch of really from people that grew up in that conservative shul. But anyway, he had no problem with the cameras in the back of it. You know, you're not going to tell a conservative, in a conservative shul not to have it. But anyway, that's just a little bit of history. But he was even, Rabbi Schoenfeld was even closer to Menachem Begin, who was the prime minister of the state of Israel. And Menachem Begin came to New York, and he asked Rabbi Schoenfeld to introduce him to Rav Soloveitchik. So they came to YU, and they peeked into Rav Soloveitchik's shiur room, and he was still in the middle of shiur. It was past the time that Shir was supposed to end, but Rav Soloveitchik wasn't always goreis the clock. That wasn't one of his strong points, being goreis the clock there. He has talmidim to this day that continue that tradition. And it was well past the time Shir was supposed to end. So what would you do if you're Rabbi Schoenfeld? You have the Prime Minister of the State of Israel. Okay, he said, we're going to have to walk up and down Amsterdam Avenue until Rav Soloveitchik is getting ready, until he finishes Shir. That's what they did. He was just walking with the Prime Minister up and down Amsterdam Avenue, you know, having a pizza at Grandma's or something, and like, you know, be until, is that the name of the place? Yeah. So till he's ready. Meaning, but people are going to say, you do what's right. Rabbi Schwartz, I think, even had more. The thing with Rabbi Schwartz was even that I came across was even more. I think to me was even a stronger point, and something that I think is a point that we should all consider, especially those who want to go into Klei Kodesh. Rav Gedalia Dov Schwartz wrote a sefer that he published in 1959, and it came with a haskama from Rav Aaron Cutler. It's not bad for a YU boy, you know. Some of us try to get haskamas for our svarim from Likud Rosh Yeshiva, but they're not so excited to do it. In the introduction to his sefer, my friend Gavri Butler pointed this out to me. He writes that the Torah world probably doesn't need his chidushim on various sugyas, but he tried to describe the landscape of the Jewish world in America at that time, 1959. He said, mechitzas were coming down, conservative shuls were building these big, big structures. You know, all those conservative reform shuls that we use for weddings now, and that's what keeps them afloat, you know, because people go and make weddings there, but no one actually davens there anymore. Right, those were originally built for people to pray in, because people were actually praying in them at that time. There was such a thing as a powerful conservative movement. And the Orthodox movement was way, way down. There was an abandonment of serious observance of Torah. So writes Rabbi Schwartz, it's kedai to look up in Hebrew books. He writes, L'da'avonenu, mispar gadol shel chanicha yeshivasenu, a large number of people who are educated in our yeshivas, sha'omdim barosh meos kihilos ba'arba pinos America, who are rabbis of shuls in all four corners of America, hundreds of shuls, maznichin kim'at legamri limut Torah bi'iyun, have abandoned the enterprise or the exercise of learning Torah bi'iyun, umashkiyim es atzmam gamkein benar hashotef hazeh beredifa achar kavod meduma, and they're too busy chasing after whatever little kavod, whatever political connections or anything else that they can get instead of rigorous Torah study. Anuroim b'medinasenu heichsha hishtadlus lios gedolim b'torah kimat nifsak b'natziirim ha-musmachim ha-mishamshim b'kodesh. That the young musmachim are not interested in becoming gedolei Torah. V'lechein yoshvim domimim b'liotza svar meleim chidushim o ha'aras al shas, and therefore none of the rabbis are writing any chidushim, no ha'aras al shas. You know what they used to produce? Sermon manuals. Right, that's what the rabbis were producing, sermon manuals, where they tell you all the cheesy jokes to start a sermon with, and they tell you how to read the New York Times, and they tell you how to, sermon manuals. But they weren't writing serious Torah. Umimela kivan shenafal kosel zeshel Torah, charev kala kerem kulo shel kerem Hashem tzavakos. He says, and it's a destruction of Torah, it's a churban of Torah. Lechein aniya katan vahadal ba'alfe Yisrael. So therefore, little me, says Rav Gedalia Dov Schwartz, she'afal pi she'gamarti eze chok limudim b'mechlala, even though I finished college, lo chafatzti l'kabel od yoser tare hevel. I'm not interested in pursuing a PhD. Rak tore hi chefzi v'tachlisi b'chayim. Torah is my purpose to live. Yilid dor sheni po b'America, second generation American, ubasi lahotzi la'or chibur katan zeh, and therefore I'm publishing this book, kedei la'orer es chaveirai, harabanim ha'gedolim imeni, in order to inspire the rabbanim that are older than me. It's 1959, I don't know how old Rav Gedalia Dov Schwartz was in 1959, but I think he was in his 20s, right? He was a very young rabbi. Lis amik b'toras chayim shalanu, livnos l'sakein es hageder shenafla, to rebuild this terrible breach that has been created. Umimeli yivanim michadosh kerem Hashem tzavakos. I had to have the chutzpah to do that, you know, at that age, to like call out the entire American rabbinate and say, what are you guys doing? What are you? Are you Tamil Chachamim? Do you strive to be Tamil Chachamim? Do you want to be Tamil Chachamim? I mean, ultimately, that's what a rabbi is supposed to be. The reputation of our yeshiva in the eyes of many at the time was, I heard Rav Lapiansky say this, it was known. Why he was known as a place of pumped out rabbis? We should be known as a place that produces Tamil Chachamim. And in Baruch Hashem, we see Achshar Dara in that sense. You know, that that there is a striving to become Talmid Chacham, but that should be the focus of, you know, Rav Shechter often points out, our tradition is from Valazhin, and the tradition of Valazhin is Torah Lishma. The tradition of Valazhin is to learn and learn and learn to become Talmid Chachamim and to learn Kala Torah Kula, and not, you know, not just some sections of Torah, and it's not just to be functionaries as rabbis who know how to officiate at a funeral, which is also a valuable thing to do, but it's not what's at our core. It's got to be when you cut us open that the Torah Hashem comes out. And that's I thought, a valuable message to share with you guys, and probably a Chanukah appropriate message also. So, Chanukah, everyone. Okay.